half Korean and half American. She was a ramen noodle and pasta nut, and she had cases of this stuff laying around. Literally, this high-end ramen noodle she ate that you couldn't find in the bodegas, and if you did, it cost like $2 a pack. She would buy a case of it at warehouse stores and live off the stuff. Well, I lived off that during the week she was sick. So the lady is walking down the hall, and I cough and ask her, "I get the red X, but what is the black X?" And she looks back and says, "The black X means we've made a second visit. Those apartments are empty." Then she steps in the elevator and is gone. That's when I realized I was the only one left alive in my building. I go up and down each floor. It's a 10-floor building, 65 apartments. Every single door has a black X on it. Well, the good news was there weren't any bodies left in my building. The bad news was I was alone in a big, scary building.
"Oh my gosh, what did you do?"
Craig sat behind Kelly, enthralled by her story. At 10 years old, he was following it like it was fiction. He hoped there would be a ghost or vampire responsible for the deaths. Kelly turned around to speak directly to Craig. She seemed to speak 1,000 words a second. "Well, I went to my apartment and thought for a while. I was a little tired of eating ramen noodles, but I didn't have any other food, so I went to the basement apartment where my super lived. Sure enough, there was a black X on her door. She was this sweet, hard-working Wonder Woman named Silvana, who took care of everyone in the building like we were her children. Anyway, Silvana kept a hidden key to her apartment in a magnet box in the laundry room down the hall. Only a few tenants knew about it. She kept UPS and FedEx deliveries in the apartment for everyone, and she trusted a few of us to have the key to help out if she was not around and people wanted their packages. So I knock on the door for a while. Then I get the key and open the apartment. Everything is there, but no Silvana. I was looking for her master key so I could scavenge for food in the rest of the building. I scour her place and find some great dried sausages, tuna fish, and a big ring of keys. Craig couldn't help himself. "Did you find any bodies?" "No. The black X's were accurate. My building was empty. Bizarre that I would luck out and get an empty building. Anyway, I found as much food as I could. I moved into the top floor penthouse, and I waited." It was John's turn to ask. "Waited for what, Kelly?"
"For it to end," Kelly said quietly.
Peter, Solange, and John knew what she was talking about. Craig looked at her curiously and asked, "For what to end?" Kelly looked out the window at the passing buildings.
"The world?"
Craig looked at Solange. The story was not over, and he wanted answers. He opened his mouth to ask another question, but Solange held up her hand and shook her head. Several seconds passed. Kelly snapped out of her trance.
"There used to be people in all of these buildings. Now there are just red and black X's on the apartment doors. It's so sad."
She paused again, looked at Craig, took a quick drink of water, and started. "Seriously, this water is so delicious." She screwed the cap back on and turned to Solange.
"I'm sorry that I ramble on, but I don't talk much within our group. It felt good to get it all out. I'm okay now. I can't promise I won't slip into more ranting, but I hope to keep it together."
They drove slowly down the avenue. The ice and snow made it hard to control the SUV. John pointed to Madison Square Garden as they turned onto 21st Street. "That's where the Knicks and the Rangers played. A lot of the big bands played," John said to his uninterested son. Craig wanted to hear more of Kelly's story.
"How did you meet the other people in New York?" Craig asked Kelly.
The boy ignored Solange's head shaking.
"We'll have plenty of time to talk about that," Kelly told him.
"I don't know for sure, but from what I could see in the few minutes I was with y'all..." Kelly's Kentucky accent came through strongly as she said "y'all."
"You have a cohesive unit, working together and making good decisions. My group is not as unified. We want to stay alive, but we don't work well together. It's one of the reasons we didn't leave New York when we should have. I work best with Bernie and Jamie. We take care of the younger kids. There are three of them. I would include Meredith, an 11-year-old girl, but she usually stays close to Avery, a 17-year-old girl, and they're pretty much self-sufficient. The teens do some chores, but not too much. They'll help if we ask. Anyway, Ahmed was a hot-shot banker, and while he and Bernie are close, he keeps coming up with plans. He works hard, but I can tell he wants to be somewhere else and with other people. He isn't happy, but he does his work. I'm okay with him. We're just not close. We have two people who are useless. Sal is a big man who could be a great asset, but he's addicted to pills. He sleeps and drinks most of the time. He scares me more than a little, and we try to keep the kids away from him, not get him angry. He shows up to eat, talks about doing a bunch of stuff, starts a project, then gets high and leaves us alone for a few days. The last person is Antonio. He was in a gang in the Bronx, and he can't let it go. He wears his colors, keeps a gun and knife with him all the time, calls me bitch a lot. Kelly stopped and looked at Craig and then at John. I'm sorry. Craig replied quickly. It's okay, I know what bitch means. I don't say it, but I know what it means. Everyone had a quick chuckle. Anyway, he tries to hang out with Avery, the older teen girl, but she won't have anything to do with him. Antonio takes food, walks around muttering Spanish about all of us, and doesn't help. John looked over at Peter. Peter nodded back at him. They paid close attention to Kelly's descriptions. John looked in his rearview mirror at Solange. She was looking back at him and nodded. Solange turned to Kelly and said, I joined this group a week or so ago. They welcome everyone. Craig told me you were headed to New Hampshire to meet his uncles and brother? Kelly asked innocently. Did your entire family survive? John nodded. That's the plan. We met Solange and Peter in Washington. We have to go to New Hampshire. It's not an option for most of us. We're inviting anyone who wants to come. We can't stay in New York. I have a 14-year-old son who's alone in New Hampshire. Greg is 15 now, Dad. His birthday was in January, Greg chimed in. John shook his head. You're right. Damn, I missed his birthday. I have a 15-year-old son in New Hampshire. Wow. Anyway, after New Hampshire, we're open to suggestions about places to settle. But we have to go to New Hampshire first. I'll talk to my people, which doesn't include the entire 11, and see what they think. The fact that you have so many young kids is inviting. Kelly sat back in her seat, taking one last sip of her water. That's the seminary up there on your right, the red brick building. See the smoke coming out of the chimney? Is there a place to pull in, or should I just park on the street? John asked. I don't want to freak anyone out by showing up unannounced. Just park by the hydrant. I doubt anyone is looking. The car noise will be strange, but we're not as with it as your group. Sal is probably sleeping one off or has disappeared. If the kids are screaming, no one will hear us. She wore a smile as wide as a child at Christmas. This is going to be exciting. I went out to find food, and I find food and people. Heck, if you show the bottled water, most of us will follow you to Canada. John pulled up next to a red brick complex of buildings with a black iron fence running along the street. A gate led to a large grassy common area in the middle of the buildings. John turned around to face the rest of his group. Everyone ready to make some friends? They opened their car doors and stepped out. It was cold. The sun was sinking off to the west, and the large skyscrapers of Manhattan blocked the sunlight that remained. John looked north to see if his signal fire was visible, but the skyscrapers blocked the black smoke. If Kelly had not stumbled upon the group, John doubted the tribes would have met. Kelly walked to the gate. I'll call everyone. As I said, half of us will be friendly. The teens will be indifferent, and I don't know if Sal and Antonia will come out or are even around. She walked into the center of four buildings. It was a beautiful arboretum with stone benches and walkways connecting the buildings. The paths were shoveled and the courtyard was maintained. As John stood in the common area of the buildings, he could almost imagine nothing was wrong with the world. They entered one of the buildings through a coat room. Kelly held the door to the main area, which was warm but not comfortable in temperature. The veterinarian walked across the room to a door. She opened it and yelled, Jamie, Bernie, kids, everyone! I found survivors! Come out and meet them! Kelly yelled for her groups. Come on out. They're great people. They have food for us. Food and water.
John held Craig by the shoulders. The boy stood in front of him. Solange and Peter flanked John on either side. They smiled warmly. John pointed Craig towards the door where Kelly yelled. Three small faces appeared in a window next to the door. A little girl waved to Craig. Craig waved back to her. All of the kids smiled and began to talk to each other. A woman in her late 30s or early 40s appeared in the window above the kids. She was shocked to see other people, and she moved the kids behind her. Kelly saw the woman and waved.
Bernie, it's okay. I met these people up on 59th. They're from North Carolina. It's a group of survivors.
The woman waved to Kelly and made a gesture as if she was wiping sweat from her brow and mouthed, "Phew." The door opened and the woman entered. She wore a hooded sweatshirt with the hood pulled up to cover her head.
"It's still cold in here," she said as she walked across the room to greet the new people.
"The kids will be here in a second. I told them they needed shoes and jackets." She finished zipping her jacket.
"You brought visitors. That's great. It's wonderful to meet new people."
She hugged Kelly and walked towards John.
"My name is Bernadette Evans, but everyone calls me Bernie."
She held out her hand to Craig. Bernie was an attractive African-American woman. She was 5'8" with a kind face and trusting brown eyes. She did not have gray hair yet, and her curly locks grew out of control and stuck out the front of her hood. She was noticeably thin. Gaunt was the best description. She was thinner than Kelly.
"My name is Craig Dixon. I'm from South Carolina."
Craig shook her hand. He looked down as he spoke. He was not as bold as his younger cousin Jay, and shied away from new people. Bernie gave Craig her attention until the introduction was done. She moved to John, Solange, and Peter.
"Hello,"
she said enthusiastically and genuinely.
"You are a sight for sore eyes. Please come inside by the fire. We don't have much food, but what we have we will share."
"John Dixon, Craig's father," John said, shaking Bernie's outstretched hand. "Great to meet you too."
"Solange Wright,"
Solange said, ignoring the handshake and instead giving Bernie an informal hug.
"Peter Reinhardt," the last of the new group said. "Very pleased to meet you."
"Bernie," John started, "we're a group of 13 people camped at 59th and 5th Avenue. We have plenty of food and are cooking a hot dinner for anyone in your group that would like to join us. Kelly told us you were light on food, so if you'd like to invite any and all of your group, please, follow us back up." He paused to let the invitation sink in. "If that's too forward, we completely understand. We brought supplies to give to you as well. No pressure, no cost, just hospitality. Honestly, we're survivors just like you. We offer any assistance and can leave some of our supplies with you when we leave New York." It was a blunt start to their relationship, but John did not want to tiptoe around the facts. "Come eat with them, or do not eat with them. Accept their supplies or do not accept the supplies." It was all done with an open and honest heart. His cards were on the table.
"Have you and your group eaten?" Bernie asked.
She looked at Craig for an answer.
"No, ma'am. We met Ms. Kelly and heard you were hungry, so we jumped into our truck and came down here to invite you back."
"Let me get our people together and see what they want to do.
I will gladly bring the children up to the plaza for dinner. I'm sure a few of the others would love to come. One member of our group has disappeared for the day, but there are 10 of us here. I hope that's not too many."
Peter stepped forward.
"We have plenty of food. Please do not feel like you have to make choices on eating or staying. There's more than enough for all of us and for you."
Peter reached into a bag he was holding and pulled out a bottled water.
"Kelly hinted that you might enjoy some fresh water. We have a case in the car that's all yours. I brought some to share immediately."
Bernie looked at the water, at Kelly, and back to Peter. Tears formed in her eyes.
"Thank you, Peter. Thank you for your generosity."
She gratefully took the water, then bowed her head and said a quick prayer. After saying amen, she opened the water and took a long taste. Her eyes remained closed for a second after taking the swig.
I'll remember that taste of water for as long as I live.
Bernie looked at John. Please have a seat. Meet our group, and we'll get ready to follow you up to the park. She waved them towards a hearth surrounding a central fireplace. It's the warmest place in Chelsea. We have some heat in the rooms, but nothing beats sitting next to the fireplace, when we have wood to keep the fire going, that is. She gestured towards the hearth a second time. Please warm yourselves by our fire. I'll get the kids ready. She turned to Kelly. Kelly, could you wake Jamie? She went to her room for a nap. I think the other two were playing cards upstairs or listening to music with their headphones. John gave Craig a friendly shove towards the door, and he turned to Solange and Peter.
Not the most cohesive group of people, huh? Either of you need help with the waters?
I think we can get them, Peter replied. He patted the bag of bottled waters. This will make Solange and me the favorites. We'll keep the water.
He nodded to Solange.
Okay, I was just trying to help, John said back.
You were trying to take our thunder, Solange told him. Peter and I get to win their hearts through water.
John shook his head in defeat and went towards the fireplace with Craig. A fire was ablaze. A pile of broken chairs and other furniture sat in a pile next to the hearth, waiting to become fuel. John looked down the hall and saw the three young children standing in their jackets while Bernie spoke to them. She waited for nods before she led them through the door.
I apologize for not bringing the children in earlier. I wanted to make sure you were good people before I let you meet them. I hope you understand.
John nodded. Bernie, if you had brought the children out before sizing us up, I would have thought less of you. The kids were young, below the age of 6. There were 2 little girls and a young boy. Casey was going to be excited to have playmates.
Craig walked to them.
Hi, I'm Craig, I'm 10.
Children like to establish ages in their greetings.
This is my dad, John.
Craig pointed to John. And my friends, Solange and Peter.
The children looked at Bernie. She nodded and smiled.
It's okay. They're good people. You can say hello.
The kids were scared, despite the okay from Bernie. They were gaunt, dirty, and their hair was tangled and messy. Solange stepped forward. She was the least intimidating of the 3 new adults. She pulled juice boxes from her satchel.
Would any of you like some juice or water?
The little girl with red hair raised her hand meekly.
My name is Solange.
She handed a juice to the girl. The girl took a small sip and handed the box to one of the other children.
No, Solange said gently. You each get your own. You do not have to share.
The other 2 children suddenly put their hands in the air.
Good. Here are the juices.
Solange pulled the straw off the side and poked it into the hole for the youngest boy.
I know how to do it, he said, smiling when he took a sip of the juice. Thank you.
She handed an extra juice to each child.
John could tell the kids were weak and malnourished. They had no energy. He turned to Bernie.
Do you have a car?
Maybe Kelly could take the kids with Peter or Solange back to our camp and get them dinner right away. Craig and I can stay with you.
Kelly shook her head.
I already ate. You go, Bernie. Take the children. Get some food. I can wait for the rest of the group. Jamie should only be a second. She can go with you.
Bernie nodded.
You're right. Let's get them some food.
She turned to them.
Okay, kids, let's take a car ride. Who wants some hot food?
The children nodded excitedly without removing the juice box straws from their lips. An older woman with long white hair pulled into a tight ponytail walked into the room. She was shorter than Bernie and frighteningly thin. She had tired green eyes. She managed a weak smile.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jamie. Jamie Norse.
She paused and held onto the back of a couch for support.
I'm very glad to meet you. I'm just not feeling all that strong today. Please forgive me if I don't seem more excited.
Peter stepped forward and put his arm around the woman. She was as thin as a piece of paper when he gripped her. He noticed she wore at least 4 layers to keep warm.
Us old people have to stick together. Let me help you. My name is Peter Reinhardt. This is Solange, John, and young Craig.
He handed her the water he had in his hand, the cap already twisted off. Have a swig of water and let's get you in the car we're taking to dinner. The older woman looked over at Bernie and Kelly. Bernie nodded. We've been invited up to the plaza for a nice dinner with their group. They have supplies and hot food. Jamie looked up at Peter. Bless you, sir. I will take your arm to get to the car, if you don't mind, though I don't know who you are calling old. Jamie let out a small chuckle. A man stepped into the hallway from the stairway door at the end of the hall. He walked with authority towards John. He was dressed well in khaki pants and a flannel shirt. He wore expensive walking shoes that were dark brown to match his belt. His hair was combed, and he did not have the dirty appearance of the rest of the group. He wiped his face before coming down to meet the new people. Despite his put-together look, his cheeks were sunken, and his pants hung off his hips. The flannel shirt gave the appearance of weight, but the man was a bag of bones. He strode up to John with his hand out.
Ahmed Cook. He shook John's hand firmly. I was an M.D. at Morgan before all this started. Very nice to meet you.
John did not drop his gaze from the man's eyes. He shook Ahmed's hand firmly and said one of the funniest things Peter Reinhardt had ever heard. John Dixon, I'm the guy with an RV, food and supplies after all this started. Very nice to meet you, Ahmed. Ahmed's mouth opened a bit in an oh gesture. He was stunned by John's reply, but accepted the bluntness. John did not care about Ahmed's former life. John continued, We invite everyone up to our camp at 59th and 5th. We open our kitchen to you. Bernie, Jamie, and the kids are headed up to eat. Ahmed turned to Bernie. Bernie, are you comfortable going up there? Maybe I should come with you. Bernie knew how hungry Ahmed was, how many meals he skipped so the children could eat. He used the offer of protection as an excuse to salvage his pride in front of John. Ahmed was not a man who typically accepted handouts.
I'd appreciate that, Ahmed. It would be great if you could help with the children.
Don't even ask twice. I'm always here to help. He nodded to her and back at John. Thank you for your generosity. No one noticed the two girls standing on the other side of the room.
May we come to dinner, too? We're starved.
The girls looked like sisters, with long hair combed neatly and flowing over their shoulders. They wore clean, coordinated clothes.
We can share the dinner if we need to.
Craig stood by the fire. He was overwhelmed by all of the new people. He watched as Solange moved from the young children to the two older girls. She introduced herself and said they would not need to share. The girls nodded, walking around to meet John and Peter before stopping in front of Craig. He was nervous, and the exchange was painful. The girls were attractive, and one was close to his age. Craig managed a weak, "Hi," never picking his head up to look them in the eyes. "Do you have a vehicle to get everyone up there?" John asked. Bernie nodded and mentioned a church van. We'll unload the supplies we brought for you. Craig can go with Peter and the rest of you to our camp. Solange and I will stay here with Kelly to meet the last people.
I don't know when Sal will be back. He sometimes goes away for a few days, and he walked out at lunch.
Bernie turned to Kelly.
Did you see Antonio?
He was upstairs the last time I checked.
The older girl near Solange, Avery, responded. He's up there. He said he was busy. She rolled her eyes. Ahmed stood next to Bernie.
Are you sure you don't want me to stay? I don't have to go up with the group.
Bernie turned to him, pinching his waist.
Ahmed, you need food more than most of us. Come, I need your help with the kids.
John stepped in. Ahmed, Bernie is right. Go with her. I can wait, as long as Kelly doesn't need more food. He turned to her.
I'm good for a day after that chili and cornbread.
She gave Jamie a look and nodded.
Real food, Jamie. I swear one of them is a chef.
Jamie turned to Peter.
Well, let's get me up there. I haven't eaten in 2 days.
Peter nodded, and they made their way to the coat room exit. Peter was practically carrying the thin woman.
My dear, if you had not told me your name was Jamie, I would have guessed it was Flat Stanley.
They went through the door, and he helped her put on a coat. The two continued outside and made their way to a green van. John turned to the children and the two girls.
"You can get in when you're ready," he motioned for everyone to get going.
Ahmed stepped forward and took the two little girls' hands.
"Come on, kids, let's get some food."
The little boy grabbed Ahmed's shirt tail and they made an airplane noise. It was a formation he used before. John smiled and reformed his opinion of the managing director. John turned to the older girl.
"Avery, is it?" he asked her.
"Yes,"
she said. "Can you help us unload some supplies from the back of the SUV? Solange and I will carry them in here, but your help to get them onto the curb would be appreciated." He handed her a bottled water as he asked.
"Sure. I can stay to help if you need me, but please let Meredith get some dinner."
The girl took the water and began to drink it. After two gulps, she offered it to the younger girl.
"Here, please take your own."
John handed the younger girl a bottle before responding to Avery.
"You know what? Forget about helping. It was wrong of me to ask. You need to eat, too. I just wanted some help with supplies right now."
He turned to Solange. "I'm going to go see about this Antonio. Why don't you get the truck unloaded on the sidewalk?"
"Okay,"
Solange replied. She turned to the girls.
"I love your hair," she said to both of them. "I have tried to grow mine that long, but it never looks good."
The girls instantly started talking about hair techniques as they followed Solange towards the coat room. John motioned to Kelly.
"Maybe I can convince Antonio to have dinner with us. If not, I'll leave him the supplies."
"That's not a great idea," she said. "I'll put the supplies in Bernie's room before we go. Please do not mention them to Antonio."
John gave her an odd look.
"You'll understand when you meet him," Kelly told him over her shoulder.
Kelly led John towards a door marked stairs. They went up one flight and opened a door into a hallway. Glow-in-the-dark stickers of big stars, little stars, planets, moons, and alphabet letters covered the walls. The stickers gave off a faint green glow that illuminated the dark hall.
"I like the stickers," John said, looking around. "What a great idea. Did it keep the hall lit all night?"
"Can you believe it was Meredith's idea? She's the young girl with Avery. She had these stickers when she was growing up, used them as nightlights in her bottom bunk bed. We went up to FAO Schwartz and found these things. Yes, it worked pretty well."
Kelly walked down the hall and pointed towards the doors.
"This is the bedroom area. The fireplace was set up to heat most of the room. Some sort of green heating option, using a central fireplace to heat the rest of the building. It's a radiator system. Water tanks sit on either side of the chimney. They heat up. The water flows through the pipes, heats up the rooms. It did an okay job, but the rooms were still pretty cold during the winter. Now that the coldest nights are behind us, the rooms are tolerable. Antonio stays in his room most of the time, comes down for meals when he runs out of food."
"He has his own food?" John asked. "It seems like everyone shares."
"Not Antonio. Not with us, anyway. He takes, but he doesn't give to the group, unless it benefits him."
She pointed to her room.
"He's a good kid, but he can't get out of his old mindset. I've seen him care for the little ones. He sneaks them food. Not the adults, but the three little kids and Meredith. They always end up with a cereal bar during the day. I saw the little boy Cameron fall on the ice. Antonio was the first one to him. Came out of nowhere. He was gentle and talked to him through the tears. As soon as Bernie showed up, tough guy came back. Anyway, I don't know if he'll come up to your camp."
"Well, the only way to find out is to ask, right?"
John knocked on the door.
"You the guy from the Suburban?" he heard someone yell from the other side.
"Yes," John replied loudly.
"Where did you take everyone?"
"Up to dinner. We have hot food and supplies. We invited everyone. No strings, no questions. Just come and eat."
The door opened. A boy stood in the frame. He wore jeans, a white T-shirt, an unbuttoned flannel shirt, and black high tops. He had a black bandana on his head. He was trying to grow facial hair. The hair was not cooperating. John stared at the perfect stereotype of an inner-city gang member.
"How come you didn't wait for me?"
the boy said defiantly when there was no cause for defiance.
"You were told we were downstairs.
You didn't come, and you missed the first boat up to 59th and 5th. I'm here now. If you would like to come up with us, we're taking a separate car. The boy laughed.
You people. New York is dead, and you still want to stay at the plaza. Unbelievable. Suckers then, suckers now.
Let me get off on the right foot. My name is John Dixon. I have my family with me and 10 other people. I came up from South Carolina, met my brother and his family in North Carolina, met the woman downstairs in Richmond, and met 5 more people in D.C. We're here to meet more survivors. What's your name?
John stuck his hand out.
Antonio looked at his hand, but did not take it.
My name is Antonio Pais. I grew up in the Bronx. I can take care of myself, but thank you for the dinner offer. If you leave me alone, I'll leave you alone. I want my cut or whatever came out of that truck and is sitting on the curb.
He looked at Kelly.
You can give it to me now, or I'll take it when you're gone.
I might do both. He kept his eyes on Kelly. If you give me my share now, I won't tell Sal about the food.
Solange walked down the hallway. Antonio scanned her with his eyes, his head moving up and down. He let out a whistle.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
He said something in Spanish to Solange. She stopped, squinted her eyes at him, and smiled.
I am only interested in men, not little boys. I would be more likely to change your diaper than kiss you.
She stood by John and Kelly. I speak English. It is not polite to speak another language when they do not understand.
Antonio spoke in Spanish, looking at John and Kelly as he said something. Solange did not acknowledge him.
Okay, then, John said. Antonio, if you would like to join us for dinner, we're leaving. If you want to stay here, that works too. From your comments, I guess we'll put the supplies back in my car. The group can bring them when they return from dinner.
He walked down the hall. He stopped and turned around.
It was nice to meet you, Antonio. We'll be loading the car. You have 5 minutes before we leave. I'll tell you, my brother is a very good cook. You will regret your decision not to come. There really are no strings. Come up, eat the food. Don't talk to us, I don't care. We're sharing food. No agenda.
John walked away. Solange reached into her backpack and took out a bottle of water. She flipped it to Antonio before turning and following John.
Kelly looked at the young man.
I hope you come with us, Tony. I know you have food, but a hot meal? None of us have had that in a while. I had 2 bowls of chili and a few corn muffins. Think about it. We'll be outside.
She followed the other 2 down the hall. Antonio stood in his doorway waiting for them to get to the stairs. When the door closed behind Kelly, he turned to his room and shut the door. He went to his single bed, lifting the sheet that blocked the underneath. He had several boxes of food, energy bars, breakfast drinks. Most of the boxes were empty or almost empty. His supplies were low. Empty cereal boxes were pushed behind his dwindling food. He sat on his bed and thought about his options. If he stayed, Sal might come back. Antonio did not like being alone with Sal. If he went, he would get a hot meal. He looked out the window. The people were almost done loading. Antonio jumped off his bed and ran downstairs. He made it to the SUV as the last door shut. He held up his hands for them to wait. Kelly opened the back door.
I'll take that dinner, but you better not try anything funny, Antonio said, using his best tough voice.
Not even a knock-knock joke, John said in reply. Kelly shut the door, and they pulled away towards dinner. They were a few blocks east on 22nd when Kelly began to talk again.
You have to tell me the story of the dog. Hubba, is it? I haven't seen a canine or feline in 30 years. How is it you have a dog?
Antonio sat in his own row behind Kelly and looked out the window in an obvious effort to appear disinterested. When Kelly mentioned a dog, he looked towards John and Solange.
You have a dog? He asked.
Antonio loved dogs. He had 3 dogs in his apartment in the Bronx. While his friends bought Rottweilers and Dobermans, Antonio picked up strays from the SPCA. His gang nickname was Mutt.
Solange saw the first spark of interest from Antonio. We do have a dog.
John's sister-in-law rescued it from a house in Raleigh. It was left behind and lived in its own filth with no food or water for months. Like all of us, the dog is a survivor.
He looks great now, Kelly replied. I can't wait to check him over.
Antonio gave a simple, "That's cool," and went back to staring out the window. Instead of a sneer, he had a faint smile on his face. Solange could see his mood brighten as she continued to talk about Hubba.
He smells up the RV. Something about the breed. He has horrible gas, but he's a good dog. He is very friendly with the kids, sleeps most of the time. He loves to have his belly rubbed.
Solange crinkled up her nose when she talked about Hubba's gas.
Bulldogs know how to make it funky, that's for sure.
Kelly spread her arms across the back of her bench seat.
How long did you stay in your building?
You know, waiting for the world to end, John asked Kelly.
I had enough food for 5 weeks.
God, if I knew how horrible this winter would be, that food would have stretched for 20 weeks. She wore a wry grin and shook her head. I filled bathtubs in every apartment, assuming the water was going to run out at some point. I saw this movie about zombies taking over London, and this father and daughter had plenty of food, but they ran out of water, and it didn't rain, so they had to leave their safe apartment.
28 days, John replied. I love that movie.
Yeah, well, I learned from that one. Make sure you have water. I filled all the bathtubs. I watched the smoke rise from the other side of the park. I heard the gunfights at the Metropolitan. I stayed low in my penthouse, but no one ever came. 2 weeks after the fires and firefight, I didn't see anyone on the streets. There were no cars. There were no sounds. I would hear an occasional airplane, but that was maybe once every other day. I decided to go outside, walk around. I went down the stairs and out the front door. There was a big black X painted right on my building's door. My building was marked as dead. No one was going to bother me if I stayed there, but my food would not hold out. Kelly looked out the window at the buildings. You see all these buildings? They probably have food in them, but the food is behind these dead, bolted, steel-reinforced apartment doors, and you can't even get into the buildings without smashing some triple-pane wire-sewn glass. Then you get into the apartments and there really isn't much food. A box of pasta or some cans of soup, or my favorite is a box of cake mix. That's all I could find when I finally got into places. New Yorkers weren't big on pantries or stockpiles. The bodegas were everyone's pantries, and they sold out in the second week of the panic. Food is not easy to come by. I'm not the strongest person, but even someone who has strength, like Antonio... Kelly motioned with a flick of her head towards the boy. He expends more energy getting into places to look for food than what he gains in the food he can find. Antonio looked forward and nodded.
Manhattan was a horrible place to stay. I kept telling everyone we need to go to Queens and go to neighborhoods. We need to find places we can get into by breaking windows, not smashing through metal doors. But then it snowed and we got stuck. I kept telling you, didn't I, Kelly?
Kelly nodded.
He did, and we should have listened. But we were scared, and we had the kids by then. Bernie had this great place with a fireplace, radiant heat, and she had some food stored, and we thought we had enough. But we didn't have close to enough. So here we are.
They were almost to the park. Antonio looked out the front window. He could see the tables and fire pits. He saw the kids, girls, Ahmed, Bernie, and Jamie eating off plates. He saw cups and pitchers of something white.
"Holy shit," he said. "You have milk? How the hell do you have milk?"
"My brother has goats." John was excited to hear Antonio warming to the dog and milk aspects of his group.
"Damn! I told you we should have left Manhattan, Kelly. I told you!"
He leaned forward in his row, his head sticking over Kelly's seat. He licked his lips, almost visibly drooling.
"Damn, we should have left Manhattan. Milk? I'd drink monkey milk right now."
They exited the van. Todd walked towards John and Solange.
"Everyone is eating well, that's for sure." He turned to Antonio, his hand outstretched.
"Hi, Todd Dixon."
Antonio looked at Todd's hand and did not take it.
"I'm here for the food, fool. I'm not here to make friends.
Where's my plate? And I want some milk.
The boy's chest was puffed out. He stood as tall as he could.
Everything is over there, Todd replied, pointing to the buffet-style table of food.
Wow. Everyone else in the group has been so friendly, Todd told John and Solange.
Antonio stopped and turned back around.
What did you say?
Todd turned to Antonio.
I said the rest of your group is friendly. You are not. Am I wrong in that statement?
There was a pause in the table conversation as Antonio looked at Todd, moving his eyes up and down. He looked at John, standing behind Todd, then over at Peter and Matt at the table. Antonio realized his situation, his weak position. He backed off.
Whatever, fool. Just give me my damn food.
Antonio turned back to the table and piled pasta on a plate. He poured himself a glass of milk, drank it, and poured another glass. He found an end seat at the table next to a fire, and sat to eat. Everyone was silent. Nervous, Antonio spoiled their dinner invitation. John dismissed the tension and walked to the table.
I'm glad you came to meet us. Everyone enjoying the food? Thank you for coming.
The first person to speak was Avery, the young woman who John judged to be between 17 and 21 years in age. She was so thin it was hard for John to be accurate with her age.
I've used up most of my faith and hope over the last 6 months, but I can honestly say this is the best meal I have ever had in my life. You have come into our lives when we needed it most. Thank you. Thanks to all of you. Meredith and I will come to New Hampshire with you. We can't stay here anymore. We won't.
She turned to Bernie.
I'm sorry, Bernie, but faith hasn't fed us. Hope hasn't fed us. I need to go with these people.
Bernie nodded to her.
It's okay, Avery. You're right. We can't stay here.
My faith kept us here, and it brought us salvation through meeting these people. I understand I'm the only one that might believe that. Her plate had bread and cornbread, but no meat sauce covered pasta or chili. Emily opened a can of tuna fish for her. Bernie explained that it was a Friday during Lent, and she could not eat meat.
It's Friday. Would you consider letting me have one last Sunday in my chapel? We can leave after service on Sunday morning.
Antonio muttered something in Spanish under his breath, then looked at John with anger in his eyes.
No agenda, huh? You bring us up here, give us food, lure our people into your group? You want us to go to New Hampshire?
He looked down the table.
Are you people crazy? Do you know anything about this guy? These people are nice to you for 30 minutes, and now you're leaving your family because he makes a box of pasta and some jarred red sauce?
Antonio said additional things in Spanish.
I'm not going anywhere.
He sat at the end seat at the table. His left arm was firmly blocking the girl beside him, Meredith, from getting near his food. The boy was territorial and selfish. Peter ignored him.
Jamie, these people, I only met them a week ago, but they're good. I considered staying behind, living out my days alone, but we're not that old. We can make contributions and help.
The woman looked at him.
Why are you talking to me like I'm 80? I'm only 68. Of course I'll come. I have years left, and I hope to spend them with people. I'm weak because we don't have any food. Once I get my strength back, you'll see who I really am. I'm actually a hell of a lot of fun.
Kelly was not at the table. She sat on the ground petting Hubba. Emily sat next to them and was in conversation with the young veterinarian. Kelly locked eyes with Bernie, nodding to let her know she was going with Jamie and the new people. Jamie looked down the table at Antonio.
Things happen fast now, kid. You see a good opportunity, you better grab it. You were right when you said we needed to leave the seminary. None of us listened to you, and we almost paid the price. You need to listen to us now. There is strength in numbers. People are scarce, let alone good people. They aren't staying, so we need to be going. Don't let your pride or machismo get in the way of your life.
You've got some moxie in you. Peter laughed. I like that.
Life's too damn short to hold it in, Jamie told him. We learned that the hard way.
John turned to Bernie.
What do we do if Sal isn't back by service on Sunday? We can't leave without him, can we?
The adults of the New York group looked at each other. Some of their eyes fell. The young children were asleep. They ate and curled up in their chairs.
I can leave that man, and do it with a clear conscience.
He would leave me in a second, Jamie answered. It may not be the Christian thing to do, but it's the world we live in. Besides, if you don't have Duane Reed's where we're going for him to search for his pills, I doubt he'll leave New York.
Antonio let out a laugh. You're all right, Jamie. You're all right, he told the older woman.
We can't leave him, Bernie said quietly. But I don't want to wait a week and deplete our resources or keep you from your family. We can worry about Sal if he doesn't come back by Sunday.
Ahmed sat next to Jamie, silent during the conversation. He looked at Todd and John.
If we come with you, what standing will we have? What voice? I hope we'll have some sort of agreement that gives us rights to food, that we will distribute work fairly.
Todd answered quickly. I understand your question and your concern, but both are founded in an old paradigm. There is no society anymore. We're a group, a tribe. 75% of it happens to be my family, but we're a group that has decided to work and live together. We share food and labor. I'm not prepared to give you any promise other than right now, you will receive an equal share of everything. When we have food, we all eat. When there is work, we all work.
That isn't very democratic. Your family should get one vote, not multiple votes.
Ahmed negotiated.
There is no voting, Todd said flatly. Don't you get it? We just do. Did we discuss coming to New York City? Yes. But instead of putting stones in a bag, we discussed and did it. You'll have a voice and a decision to make every day. Do you want to stay with a group or leave?
Todd was blunt. Life was different now. He sensed Ahmed did not want to let his old life and status go.
Bernie stood and motioned to the three children.
We should go home, or at least get these three and maybe Meredith a bed.
Meredith's eyes were half closed. She perked up at the mention of her name.
I'm okay, just a little tired. I'll go home with Avery. I'm okay.
Let's all go home, Jamie said. I'm sure we have a lot to talk about separately.
She turned to Peter.
Thank you for your hospitality, sir. I hope to see you tomorrow.
We'll be here, Peter replied to his new friend. Don't worry, we'll be here.
Goodbye, Hubba,
Kelly said to the dog, rubbing his ears. Hubba snored loudly as she rubbed him. Kelly walked over and picked up Cameron, carrying him to the church van. She placed him on the seat against the window. He did not wake up. She walked around the van, got into the driver's side, and started the engine.
"Can we help clean up?" Bernie asked.
"No worries," Todd told her. "We're going to fold the plastic tablecloths up and throw everything in the trash. I'll clean the pots tomorrow." He gave her a quick hug. Todd put his hand out to Ahmed. "Get a good night's sleep. Think about our offer. We don't need a decision tonight or even tomorrow." Before John and Solange arrived with Antonio, Todd and Emily briefed Ahmed, Bernie, Jamie, and the rest of the group on the master plan of traveling to New Hampshire.
"We'll see you tomorrow," Ahmed said to him.
"We have eggs and pancakes planned. Just as Antonio said, we're luring you with food."
Todd gave Ahmed a pat on the back and a smile. The former banker picked up one of the little girls and took her to the van. Avery thanked her hosts before grabbing the last sleeping child.
"They're tired from hunger. It makes you so weak," she told them. "Thank you."
She and Meredith climbed in the van together, placing the sleeping girl in between them. Antonio finished his last bite of pasta, walked over to Hubba, bent down, and gave the dog a quick pat on the head. He looked at Emily.
"Cool dog," was all he said.
He opened the passenger door to the van and jumped in. Bernie shut the sliding side door, and the New York tribe headed down Fifth Avenue.
"Well, that was a quick strike," Emily commented. "Matt, did you even say anything?"
Matt shook his head.
I set up the kids in the RV watching some cartoon movie and came back out, but everyone was stuffing their faces. They seemed nice. Obviously Antonio is a little rough, but he likes Hubba, so he can't be all bad.
He is not so tough. He is scared. He, Ahmed, and this Sal guy are the only men in his group. Now he is entering a group of almost all men. He needs to find his place.
Solange was a keen observer.
I'm interested to meet Sal.
I mean, Todd chuckled. Jamie wanted to pack up and leave from here tonight. What kind of person must he be?
Did you catch the little girls' names? I heard Cameron for the boy, and Meredith and Avery, but what about the youngest girls?
John was at a loss.
Wendy and Bridget, Craig spoke up. I talked to them on the ride up. They're 5 and 6. They went to kindergarten together.
How weird is that?
They told me every day Wendy and Bridget would show up and another person would be gone until it was just us and the teacher. Then the teacher didn't show up.
Wendy's parents died, and Bridget's parents were still alive, so they took her in. And they knew Cameron's parents, and when they died, they took Cameron in too. So the three little kids were together until Bridget's parents died. The kids went outside, started walking around the Upper East Side.
Craig paused. I don't know what that means, but anyway, they're walking around and were told to head to the seminary. Bernie had the word out that she was accepting people and orphans. The kids walked from 89th and 3rd to the seminary. I don't know how far that is, but Bernie said it still amazes her when she thinks about it.
It's a long way, let's just say that, Todd told his nephew.
It was 7:30 and dark. Todd stretched out his arms after the long day.
I'm exhausted. I'm going to clean up and go to bed.
He walked over to the trailer where the kids were watching television and opened the door. He slipped inside to say goodnight to his sons and make sure they were ready for bed. Melanie was in the RV, hiding from the New York group.
I almost forgot you were in here, Todd said to her. I didn't realize you weren't going to come out and meet everyone.
Melanie gave Todd a bashful look.
I fell asleep.
Honestly, I was going to come out, but Matt set the kids up with a cartoon. I put my head down on the pillow, told them to wake me up in 5 minutes.
Yeah, I just woke up.
Melanie slipped out the door and sat down at a table. Solange and John were eating cold pasta and bread.
Did you miss the party too? She asked.
We never got to eat. Solange filled Melanie in on the new people. John gave his opinion. I didn't meet anyone that wouldn't be a great addition to the tribe. He twirled his fork to get another bite of dinner. Ahmed and Antonia were good people. They just live in the past. Once they step into the new reality, they're going to be great contributors. If you saw Ahmed with the little kids, he's a natural.
Todd came out of the RV.
The kids are down, he whispered. Where am I sleeping?
Emily looked at the group seated at the table.
He doesn't know it yet, but I booked us a room at the plaza.
While Todd and Solange were on their adventure at the Metropolitan, Emily and John scouted out rooms in the hotel. Peter, Melanie, Craig, Todd, and Emily would stay in the hotel, while Solange, Matt, and John took a night in the RVs. Matt pulled the kids' trailer duty for the evening. The adults cleaned the camp area, balling up the tablecloths as promised and throwing them in a trash can down the street. It made little sense to use a trash can no one would ever empty, but old habits die hard. The Dixon tribe was enthusiastic about their new friends and fell asleep with hopes of a stronger tribe when they left New York City. The New York group went to bed with full bellies for the first time in months, each putting a bottle of water on their nightstands before drifting off to sleep.
34. Todd woke up early the next morning. Sunlight streamed through the window of his second-floor room. He was in a king bed with Emily on sheets he hoped were fresh. The air was cold in his room. He rolled over and quickly jumped into his clothes. He snuck outside and into the adult's RV parked in front of the hotel. John sat at the small dining table with a paper cup of coffee. He did not look like he had slept.
"Well, older brother," Todd asked as he poured himself a cup of coffee. "What's the plan?"
He doctored his coffee with sugar and milk and sat down across from John. "I'd like to leave today, but I respect the priest's request. I can wait.
Besides, aren't you and Emily headed down to Ella's Island today? John had a smart-ass smile on his face, mocking his brother for having to follow his wife's wishes. Despite the teasing, he envied Todd for still having a wife. Today I am going to play it casual. I'll make breakfast. If the New York people come, they come. They know we're here. Emily, Melanie, the kids, and I will leave for our trip at around 10. Anyone who would like to come can join us. We'll do a big stir-fry or something easy for dinner tonight. It will be an open-ended invitation. He sipped his coffee. No pressure. We can leave on Sunday and still be in Hanover by 4 or 5 p.m. It's getting warmer. I bet the roads are clearing. John looked exhausted. I'm worried about what I will find up there. I'm losing my mind, knowing Greg is there alone. I worry more that he isn't there at all. He lowered his head. I don't sleep much anymore. I'm having trouble keeping it together. Todd looked at his brother, unraveling with each passing day. Wake your sons, take the Suburban, and leave. There's no reason for you to wait on Bernie. Put chains on the tires, drive slowly. Go. Find my nephew. We'll meet you up there. A woman spoke from behind John. You should go, John. We can handle everything from here. Solange stood in the doorway of the bedroom. We will see you in a few days. She smiled at him. She did not want him to leave, but she knew it was the best thing for him. I'm leaving you a little light on the muscle if both Matt and I go. Even Craig has been a big help. I made it through a few months in Raleigh without you. Emily is strong. Solange is strong. Peter and Melanie can help. Take some food and get out of here. I'll get Matt and Craig. John stood up and put on his coat. Should we come back here if we find him? Should we meet in Boston? We'll come to Hanover on Sunday. I know we aren't going to stay there, but maybe it will be a nice break for us. We've been on the road for almost 2 weeks. Let's get up there, take over a few houses, figure out what our future holds. We can always swing through Boston after Hanover. Todd stood and gave John a hug. Go find Greg. I'll see you in 2 days. Solange stepped forward and gave John a hug as well. Be safe, she said, kissing his cheek gently. He nodded to both of them. A tear fell down his cheek before he opened the trailer and went to get Matt and Craig. So, it is up to us, Solange said to Todd. Yep, he replied, sitting down to finish his coffee. Todd jumped back up. You know what? Let's give him the animals or the U-Haul. Well, I guess the animals. Todd ran out of the trailer as Matt, John, and Craig walked towards the SUV. Take the animals, Todd said to them. He held out his hand to shake Matt's. I'll see you in a day, Matt. You too, Craig. Help me hitch the chickens and goats to the SUV. Are you doing this so the New Yorkers can't take them? John asked. Or to lighten your load? A little of both. It will be one less thing I need to take. Solange is grabbing this morning's eggs. If they don't want to come, we might give the New Yorkers the second RV. The rest of us can squeeze into one and tow the U-Haul. I like the option of going in one vehicle. Todd was babbling, trying to ease his brother's conscience, as well as talking himself into the intelligence of his plan. Solange emerged from the animal trailer with a basket full of eggs. She came over and hugged Matt and Craig. Take care of your father, and say hello to your brother from me. Will do, Matt said. You're going to like him. He's the serious one. Solange laughed. John backed the Suburban to the animal trailer hitch, locked the ball down, and pulled away towards the George Washington Bridge. Solange turned to Todd. Your wife is going to be upset he left without saying goodbye. She'll get over it. He turned to go back into the trailer, then paused and looked over his shoulder. At least I hope she will. There was concern in his voice. I need more coffee. You? Always, she said. They sat at the dining table, drinking coffee, and thinking about their day. What made you trust us that first day in Richmond? Why did you get out of the car? It was just me and Emily standing next to the RV. What was it that worked? Todd was trying to figure out what he could do to make the last few people in the New York City group trust him. I did not trust you. I had 3 guns in the car, a pistol on my lap and 2 shotguns on the other seat. That is why I did not let you come with me in the car. Once I met you, spoke to you,
I knew I was safe. You give off, I believe you call it, a good vibe?
You had guns?
Solange nodded.
Would you like to know my other secret?